You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Adam Quayo, and this is the Earn and Invest Podcast.
When I was a kid, I had headaches every day for years. My parents took me to pediatricians and neurologists. I got blood tests and CAT scans. I even tried a few meds. Nothing. No abnormal findings and no curative treatments until one of my doctors suggested biofeedback. So I went to the office and met this wonderful practitioner who taught me what he called self-hypnosis. It was a process of meditation with deep breathing, checking in on my body, and eventually not only commanding but envisioning my muscles relaxing, the pain going away, and the discomfort abating. He also taught me a technique of bringing myself to a relaxed state and then envisioning the things in my life that were giving me anxiety. I would imagine myself performing well on tests. I would see myself making baskets at basketball tryouts. Little did I know, what I was being taught was mindfulness, a technique I would utilize through the turbulent teenage and young adult years, a technique that could possibly improve many of our finances as well as our lives. Today, we discuss how. Adam Quayo is the host and executive producer of the Mindful Fire podcast, a show about crafting a life you love and making work optional using the tools of mindfulness, envisioning, and financial independence. He's also a father, husband, entrepreneur, speaker, and facilitator. For the last 12 years, Adam has worked in sales at Google, where in addition to his main role, he's taught mindfulness, envisioning, and emotional intelligence to over 2,500 Googlers worldwide. Adam Quayo, welcome to Earn and Invest. First and foremost, I feel like we have to ask a really basic question. What is mindfulness? And talk about the science that helps support it.
Well, first, Jordan, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here with you. And yeah, it's a great question because I think there's so much hype around mindfulness. Like it's going to solve everything in your life just by, you know, sitting down on the cushion for 5 minutes. But, you know, really the definition that I love for mindfulness comes from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who really popularized this idea of mindfulness in the West. He says that mindfulness is the awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally. And so there's really two parts to this phenomenon of mindfulness. You know, it's a capacity that we all have to some degree and that we can cultivate. And there's two parts to it. There's the awareness piece, so being aware of what's going on in our mind, our body, and in our environment, and the non-judgmental piece, right? That I like to think of as just bringing an attitude of openness, kindness, and curiosity to what's going on, to what we're being aware of, right? And so to summarize, like I simplify it into mindfulness is a kind, curious awareness of whatever's happening.
I love that description because I think of my childhood and that's exactly what that was, is it was an awareness of the muscles that were aching and cramped up in my body, as well as my fears and anxiety. But then the second part was that non-judgmentalness. It was being aware and being accepting without attaching anxiety, good or bad feelings to these things. So this is clearly something you're passionate about, but you work in sales at Google. How did this become part of your corporate life, teaching about mindfulness at Google?
Yeah, I wish it was a rosier story, but I had to learn this the hard way, honestly, you know, in mindfulness and envisioning, which is something I'm very passionate about. I had to learn this the hard way, right? So I was in my career, you know, I had gotten this job at Google, which turns out I had envisioned, but, you know, I got into this awesome opportunity, you know, 13 years ago now, and I was doing my job and trying to make things happen. And really, you know, it was great in a lot of ways, but there was also quite a bit of suffering, right? I was resisting, right? Kind of what you were describing before with the pain and the muscle tension that you were feeling that was causing the symptoms. I was resisting what was happening, right? Like I was trying to make all these things happen. I was trying to make this role happen, create my own role to essentially teach user experience to people, publishers who have ads on their website, and help them grow their business that way rather than just slamming more ads on the page. And even though it seemed very obvious to me, and like it was falling on deaf ears, right? And so I was really trying to make this happen. I was resisting, and you know, it was causing me a lot of suffering. And so I was kind of complaining about this to a friend of mine at Google. And he said, hey, like, you should try meditating. And I was like, meditating? What is meditating? And he kind of told me, oh, you know, it makes me a better father, better husband, better at work. And I was like, whoa, dude, like, come on. I thought the guy was like trying to sell me a timeshare or something. It got a little bit salesy there. And so, but, you know, the reality is I needed something. And I had all this time to kill on my commute on the shuttle they have to the office. And so I decided to start meditating. Right? He gave me some guided meditations. I sat there. I breathed. I, you know, very quickly realized that I'm terrible at meditation and that my mind was all over the place and it was full of random thoughts. And I was convinced I was doing it wrong, which turns out is the most common experience that people have with mindfulness and meditation. So I gave up. Fortunately for me, I ran into him a few months later. He doubled down on the sales pitch and I gave it another shot. And around that time, I also took my wife to a little retreat. You know, I got her this thing for Valentine's Day. If I'm being honest, it was a Groupon that I found. But we, you know, we went and I learned, you know, that the kind of the formal practice of meditation and that what I was experiencing was totally normal, right? And so that kind of really helped me. And we can kind of talk through some tips later potentially on how people can overcome these early challenges. But it really helped me see, like, you know, I'm not doing it wrong. I'm actually just doing the practice. And every time my mind wanders away and I bring it back, that is the practice. We're strengthening our mental muscles, in quote unquote, of attention and meta attention, which is the attention of attention. The ability to know that our mind has wandered. And so when our mind's wandering, it's not like we're doing it wrong. We're actually doing that. And I often describe it as like a bicep curl for those muscles in your brain. I've been meditating since then, you know, pretty consistently. It allowed me to start gaining in self-awareness, right? Like before I had this capacity for mindfulness, which I built through meditation. You know, meditation is simply mental training, right? And mindfulness is what the capacity that we're training. As I built this capacity, I started to notice these same stories coming up again and again. You're doing it wrong. You're not good enough. You know, it's never going to happen. You know, these stories that are, you know, things that I've practiced consciously and unconsciously for my entire life that I was totally unaware of. And they were causing a lot of the suffering that I was feeling. And so as I started to bring this kind, curious awareness to it, I was able to kind of loosen the grip that those had on me and kind of navigate my career with more ease and just more success, a lot more success. And so that's kind of how I got into it. And then, you know, subsequently became a facilitator through, again, unfortunately, learning envisioning the hard way afterwards.
I love this framework you're talking about. And people who have listened to me for a while know that I have this theory about happiness. Happiness is not a great word, but contentment or self-actualization or whatever we want to call the higher state of being in which we feel much better. And a lot of times I talk about it being really made up of two things, meaning and happiness, or excuse me, meaning and purpose. Purpose is very much about our present and future, the actions we take. But meaning is very much about how we cognitively think about our past. And what you just described there, this idea of becoming quiet and aware, being mindful, allows you to hear the stories you tell yourself about the past and maybe rewrite some of those or be more gentle with yourself, which I think is such a key ingredient to getting to that eventual happiness. And mindfulness is like the path or the road that gets us to become aware of those narratives, those stories we tell ourselves about ourselves that aren't serving us. So I love that description you just gave. We've been throwing around a lot of words, right? We've been talking about mindfulness. We've been talking about meditation. You've said envisioning a bunch of times. I even talked about envisioning a little bit in my intro. I want to get to what all that means in a moment. But before I do, none of this sounds like it has anything to do with our personal finances or financial independence. And yet you've really combined those in your podcast. So how does mindfulness connect to that other side, to the finances and financial independence?
Amazing. A wonderful question, Jordan. Yeah. And that was something that I asked myself for a while, you know, and I felt like I basically became super interested in mindfulness and became a facilitator and trained many people on it at Google. And I also then subsequently was introduced to the FIRE movement and financial independence and the life-changing, you know, ability to create options for myself by getting my money sorted out, because I was totally, you know, I was making money. Luckily, I wasn't spending it all. I was doing the 401k, but that was it. I wasn't investing it. I wasn't doing anything. And so when I kind of looked at these two passions and how they intersect, for me, it really comes down to awareness and choice, right? And so on the mindfulness side, awareness, as we talked about, awareness of like what's going on in my body, in my mind, what stories am I telling myself? Are they useful, right? You know, if they're not useful, why am I telling them, right? Then once I'm aware, I can choose, right? When I catch myself in an unhelpful story, I can ask myself, is this useful? And if it's not useful, I can choose to let it go. The thing about envisioning, which we can get to soon, is you know, it's really about choosing a new story for the life that I want to live and then practicing that story and putting our predicting brain to work for us. So happy to go into how our brain works and why envisioning works, but really it's all about choosing a new story. And so on the finance side, you know, you need to first become aware of your finances, right? You need to know how much money you make, how much money you spend. You know, how much debt you have, what are the interest rates on that debt? And then once you have that awareness, you can choose what you're going to do about it. You can choose, hey, I'm spending all this money on subscription services that I don't even watch. Wouldn't it be nice if I chose to, instead of spending that money there, I could go out to dinner two times extra a month, which I love to do. Or I could go on another trip once a year by just saving all that money that I'm wasting. And so really it's awareness and choice. And, you know, obviously there's a more macro level. Once you bring these pieces together, you really start to understand yourself better. You have more self-awareness and then you can really choose, well, okay, I have a better understanding of myself and what's important to me. I have a better grasp on my finances. Now I can choose how I want to live my life, how I want to spend my time.
So this is actually classical personal finance teaching, actually, this idea that we have these stories we tell ourselves about our money as well as about life. But in this case, we're talking about our money. We have these stories we tell ourselves about our money and they're not serving us. Those are those money scripts that we always talk about and often come from generational trauma or little traumas we've had of childhood. And so we have to recognize those. And the way we recognize those is becoming mindful and quiet and listening to our inner voice. But then the next step is how we either change them or react to them in a more positive way. And you've used this term envisioning quite a bit. What exactly is envisioning?
Yeah. So, you know, envisioning is a practice of choosing a new story to create a new reality, right? There's two aspects of how our brain works. There's a few others, but the main two that I generally teach are this idea of neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is the idea that everything we think, feel, and pay attention to changes the structure and function of our brain, right?
And it so let me interrupt you for a minute. When we're talking about those old narratives, specifically when we come to this, we've had all of these old bad narratives, money scripts, or generational traumas that have written and neuroplastically changed our brains in such a way that is, in this case, probably not helpful.
Exactly. Those are well-worn paths, right? Like if you imagine a field and you're walking through the field, eventually, if you keep walking on the same path, it's going to become a trail, right? It's going to kill the weeds there, and it's going to become a path. You know, the same thing is happening in our brain with our neural connections, right? So if you think about any skill you've ever learned, you know, I like to use the example of playing guitar, right? At first, holding the guitar, the finger movements, the sounds, you certainly can't read music. All of it is unnatural and uncomfortable. But as you do it more and more, it becomes easier and easier because the neural circuitry associated with those skills become well-worn paths, right? And so these stories that we've told ourselves, whether they be money stories or limiting beliefs or whatever, it can be positive things too, right? Every story we've told ourselves is kind of encoded in our brain. And the more times that the more attention we've given to it, the more likely they are to, fire in the future, so to speak. And so envisioning is about, one, using mindfulness to, with a kind, curious awareness, become aware of those stories, ask ourselves, is this helping me get where I want to go or not? And then also choosing a new story. I like to challenge people to think really, really big about their life and what's possible for them. And I actually created an envisioning exercise for your audience that they can go, and it's a one-page journaling exercise where they can really explore for themselves what is a really big vision for my life and what's possible for me if everything goes better than I expect. And if they want to download that, they can do that for free at mindfulfire.org/docg. Ultimately, it's about getting clear on what you want and then using the second aspect of our brain, which is, we have these stories encoded in our brain and we want to choose a new story. And so we can use the fact that our brain is predictive by nature to kind of practice that new story. And so the research behind this comes from a woman named Regina Polly out of UC Riverside. And she wrote an article called The Predicting Brain, in which she said that even before events happen, our brain makes a prediction of what's most likely to happen and sets in motion the thoughts, perceptions, emotions, and even physiological responses for what's expected. She goes on to say, in a sense, we learn from the past what to predict for the future and then live the future we expect. I summarize this as we're telling ourselves stories about how our life is going to be, and then we're acting out those stories. And so envisioning is all about creating a new story. And a metaphor that I really find useful to kind of describe the interaction between neuroplasticity and our predicting brain is that our thoughts and stories are like seeds. The thoughts and stories that we tell ourselves most often and give the most attention are the ones that we're planting and watering the most. And not surprisingly, those are the seeds that grow. And that is how when I say our stories create our reality, that is how that's happening. And so we can, instead of, watering these old seeds, going through these same loops of thought that we've done in the past that might not be helpful, we can kind of take the watering can over to some new seeds of the life that we want to live and start watering those seeds through various envisioning practices that will help create the reality that we want, because we're essentially priming our mind to be ready to see opportunities out there, right? This, when I teach this many times to Google engineers, they don't want to hear the woo-woo stuff. They don't want to hear about raising your vibe and manifestation. And I don't personally have a problem with any of that. But when I teach this, I keep it very focused on the practical aspects of how our brain works and just, the idea that when we prime our mind to be ready to see something, when something comes along our path that's aligned with that, we take action because we're ready to see it.
You know, I love that because, again, it connects to my childhood experience of this practitioner teaching me to think about the future and things I was worried about or times in my life I would have to show up and produce. And he was giving me these tools of priming my mind for the right outcomes, the outcomes that were more pleasing, the outcomes that felt better. And so I spent a lot of time during childhood doing exactly that, a practice that I still practice today. You know, it's really interesting because I've also used similar words when I describe specifically our stories. So we're looking at it this in two ways. So there's two things you can do, right? You have these negative narratives, maybe from generational trauma, maybe from just bad money scripts or life scripts that you've had. And so there's two ways you can go about it. You can either go back and do something called narrative therapy, where you dissect the past and rewrite those stories that instead of being a victim who had no agency, you were more a hero who survived and dealt well with these things. But you're actually talking about the second part, because that's really thinking about the past. You're talking about the future, which is creating these new narratives of what you think the future can be by seeing them, envisioning them, practicing them before they happen. And we all know my kid's violin teacher used to say, practice makes permanent, not practice makes perfect, but practice makes permanent. So if you practice these bad narratives, those bad narratives become much more permanent. And yet if you practice the better good narratives, those can become more permanent. How does all this attach to meditation? So, I mean, again, we're talking kind of very ephemerally up in the clouds at the moment about changing the way we think about things. But a lot of people are going to say, yeah, but how do I tactically do that? Is meditation the way we get there?
I think it's a piece of it, right? So meditation, you can think of as simply mental training, right? It's exercise for your mind. And different, just like different types of physical exercise train different muscles in your body, different types of meditation can train different faculties of mind, right? So I already described, you know, when your mind wanders and you bring it back, kind of that's, you know, considered focused attention meditation. You rest your attention on your breath, your mind wanders, you bring it back. That's training your attention and your meta attention, right? That'll help with something like concentration, right? There are other meditations like, you know, love and kindness meditation, compassion meditation, that trains our ability to feel what others are feeling with empathy and compassion. You know, there are many practices that we can do to kind of plant these new seeds and create this new reality for ourselves. And, you know, what I'm really excited about doing is kind of bringing this idea to the fire space, because I think the big problem that we see in the fire space, and you and I actually met in a session at the Economy Conference called I'm Fired, So What, you know, why aren't I happier? Right. And that was that room was packed, right? I was standing room only, totally. Right? And so what I'm really excited about is helping people kind of avoid that by getting clear on what their big vision for their life is, their post-fi life specifically, and then kind of starting to plant the seeds of that life now so that they can start taking action, both, you know, in their mind, but also in the real world, by talking to people, trying things, doing mini experiments, and actually trying that life on. And so the first step is answering the question, what do I actually want, right? What do I want my life to look like? That's number one. And that's exactly what that envisioning exercise I mentioned before is designed to help you do, and to think really big. Because so often we're thinking within the constraints of our current reality and our current limitations and ideas of what's possible. I tell people when I teach this at Google or I do it in my coaching programs, I say, let's put all those ideas of what's reasonable, rational, realistic in a little box. Let's set it aside for a few moments and just dream really big for a few moments. You don't have to do any of this, right? You can, but you're going to come up with new ideas and new connections between ideas that you might not have seen before. So the first thing is get clear on what you want. And then where meditation practices come in, and that's when I teach envision, when I say envisioning practices, they're all different meditations, right? And so one of them is visualization, right? Which is kind of what you were describing. Seeing yourself putting the ball through the hoop, seeing yourself performing on stage, right? And in this case, it's seeing yourself walking through your ideal life. over and over and over again, planting and watering the seeds. Another one that I teach people is kind of a mindset affirmations practice. And that is basically thinking about your vision and coming up with some mindsets that would be helpful to embody as you try to make it a reality, right? So for me, you know, when I was going through a time where I needed to find a job, long story short, I came within 30 days of losing my job at Google because I was telling myself a story that success meant quitting Google and becoming an entrepreneur, right? And so I would always tell myself this story. This was before I realized all of this. And I basically got exactly what I asked for. They eliminated my job and I had 30 days to find a job. Well, I had a few months to find a job, but I came within 30 days of being shown the door. And I realized, like, this is not going to help. I mean, whatever I'm doing is not working. So I need to come up with a new mindset to support me in overcoming this challenge. And so I told myself, I'd sit, I'd meditate, kind of focused attention, allow my mind to settle. And then I would say out loud, the world is abundant with opportunity. And I would visualize in my mind, how is this true in the past? I would see opportunities coming my way in the past, getting the job at Google, having an opportunity to go on a work rotation in Asia, all these cool opportunities. Then I would say it again, the world is abundant with opportunity. I would then see, how is this true in the present? I would see all the ways that was true in the present. And then I would move to the future. How will this be true in the future? And I saw friends reaching out to me with opportunities, me having a great time on this team, being very successful, so on and so forth. Incredible things started to happen. I started to see opportunity everywhere, right? I had friends literally reaching out to me, telling me, hey, my team has headcount. Oh, you should go talk to this company. And, you know, I finished that 30 days with not one, but two job offers, one inside Google, one outside Google. And fortunately, I chose to stay at Google. And it was in large part because I was planting the seeds with this mindset affirmations practice. It was me priming my mind to be ready to spot those opportunities out in the world, right? It wasn't magic, right? It's kind of like when you get a new car and suddenly that car is everywhere, mm-hmm. right? It's that phenomenon. And the nice thing is that experience helped me realize, like, we can do this in any way we want to create absolutely unbelievable outcomes. And I have so many examples for myself and clients that of things that, like, were so improbable and just happened faster than I could even have imagined.
We are talking to Adam Quayle. He's the host and executive producer of the Mindful Fire podcast, a show about crafting a life you love and making work optional using the tools of mindfulness, envisioning, and financial independence. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. All right, so most of us know the bad news already. If you were using Mint as a budgeting app, it has shut down. But the good news is There's something better, and it's called Monarch Money. I started using Monarch Money myself about 5 months ago, and I knew immediately that I liked it more than any other budgeting app I had ever used. For one, it focuses on collaboration. This is easy to share with your spouse, your partner, your financial advisor, and it's aspirational. Not only can you look at your current budget, but what do you want to buy? What do you want your goals to be? You can focus on those in Monarch Money. It's the next generation of personal finance apps. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Furthermore, you can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. Again, that's monarchmoney.com/EARN. What I like about this app is it's intuitive, easy to use, quick to sign on. It's collaborative, as we talked about. It's customizable. The idea is you can use this app the way you want to use it. And the reason why is the Monarch Money team is customer focused. They are focusing on you, me, and all the other people who want to use this app to live a better financial life. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. That's monarchmoney.com/EARN for your extended 30-day free trial. We are back with Adam Quayle. For the past 12 years, Adam has worked in sales at Google, where in addition to his main role, he's taught mindfulness, envisioning, and emotional intelligence to over 2,500 Googlers worldwide. Adam, we've been throwing around this term mindfulness, and we've talked about what it can do for you, but I want to be much more practical and tactical. There are a lot of people listening to this saying, all of that sounds good. Mindfulness sounds good. Envisioning sounds good. This could be the way for me. What are some of the first steps? If you're just listening to this right now and saying, you know, sign me up, what does that look like?
The first step, I would say, is getting clear on what you actually want, right? You know, as I mentioned, you know, I put together a one-page envisioning guide that you can download to think big about your life, get clear on the question, what do you actually want? That's available at mindfulfire.org/docg. And once you have that, you can start taking action. Mindfulness, you know, if we're talking specifically about mindfulness is something that, you know, I kind of think of it's like the foundation of all of this. It's going to allow you to have greater self-awareness. So if you want to get started with the practice of mindfulness, that's going to support you in making that big vision a reality. What I would say is start very small, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, it's very easy to feel like your mind's all over the place, like you're doing it wrong, right? And so first and foremost, I would say, you know, start by doing a simple guided meditation. I have many of them on my podcast, which you can find on wherever you listen to podcasts, the Mindful Fire podcast, all sorts of different guided meditations there. But just sit in a quiet place. You can sit in a chair or on a cushion with a tall, straight back. Close your eyes and just take some deep breaths. And literally all you have to do is be aware of the breath coming in and the breath going out. Literally, all you need to do is feel that breath. And then naturally, your mind is going to wander. And here's one of the tips that I always tell people to avoid that feeling of not doing it right. And that's, you should expect your mind to wander because it's going to wander. And so knowing that it's going to wander and expecting it is actually quite a relief. And so when it does wander, you can just simply notice with that kind, curious awareness, oh, my mind's wandered. Thinking is happening. Oh, what's on my mind? Oh, I'm thinking about lunch, or I'm thinking about that thing I have to do. Okay. Let me then choose to bring my attention back to my breath and start again. Over and over again, each time your mind wanders, you can choose to just gently bring it back and start again. And this idea of starting again is also one of the main things that I find super helpful for me, both in meditation, but in life in general, right? There's going to be a time where, you know, despite your best efforts, you just don't meditate for some period of time. Could be a day, could be a month, a year, you can always just start again. Just like you did when the mind, when your mind wandered away from your breath and you brought it back and started again, you can always just start again. And, you know, so I would start very small, 2 minutes, 1 minute, whatever. It's about doing it consistently where you start to see the benefits of self-awareness, a little bit more ease with how you deal with emotions. You know, really, it's a practice to help you deal with the ups and downs of life with a little bit more equanimity, a little bit more balanced. And so it's not about like doing one like super long 10-day silent meditation retreat and you're good for life. It's more about doing a little bit each day. And so I would start super small, make it very easy. You know, I'm sure everyone listening to this has read Atomic Habits or is familiar with Atomic Habits. Make it the easiest possible thing to do. Tie it to something that you already do, whether it be putting your feet out as you get out of the bed and taking a few breaths in after you work out, after a shower. Tie it to something that you already do and do it consistently. And then if you like it and feels good, start to expand the time that you're doing it. But you don't need to do more than 15, 20 minutes, you know. But you can, right? You can certainly go on retreats and do things like that later on, but it's not required at all to get the benefits.
It sounds like it's almost impossible to do it wrong. So I won't ask you, can you do it wrong? But what I will ask you is, how do you know when you're making headway? Like when you're doing it right, or what are the effects that you expect to eventually see?
Yeah, great question. I don't think that you can do it wrong. As I mentioned earlier, recognizing that your mind is going to wander and then realizing that each time it wanders and you bring it back, it's like doing a bicep curl for your brain. That will allow you to kind of keep going, right? And then what you can expect is you can start to notice a little bit less judgment, right? So when we talked about mindfulness, the definition was doing it with a non-judgmental attitude. There's going to be judgment, right? And you're going to judge the fact that you're judging, right? And so over time, you'll start to notice, okay, there's a little bit less judgment, or I'm not judging myself for judging myself. And it just becomes a little bit easier, a little bit more enjoyable. And then the other benefits, really the most important benefits, are what happens off the cushion. For me, one of the first benefits I ever noticed was I was sitting at the Salt Lick in Austin, Texas, eating barbecue with my brother and my now wife, then girlfriend. And we were looking at these old pictures on Facebook or whatever. This was a while ago. And a picture came up of her and her ex-boyfriend, right? And I felt this surge of jealousy, just an absolute surge of jealousy in my body. And I then had this thought, this like awareness of like, wait a second, why am I being jealous? She's sitting here with me. We're together. We're happy. There's no reason to be jealous. And so this basically was like, this is not useful. And I just let it go. That could have ruined my night. In the past, that would have ruined my night. And so really what mindfulness and this practice of meditation, which trains our ability to be mindful, to have a kind, curious awareness, it allows us to experience our emotions without getting caught up in them. And so over time, that's going to happen more and more, and you're going to be able to kind of see them arise and kind of float on by like clouds in a clear blue sky, so to speak.
So we're talking about mindfulness, meditation, and envisioning. Before the break, you mentioned this idea that you've seen it really actually change people's lives. Tell us about some of your experiences at Google or with people you're coaching. How is this mindfulness, especially this envisioning, thinking about kind of those bigger goals without worrying about the constraints? What have people achieved using these methods?
Yeah. So this is actually the first time I'm having a chance to share this, but I had an opportunity recently to something really, really big. The biggest moment of my career happened to me. So I'll kind of walk you through how it came about. So I was coaching this guy, Nick, and I was challenging him to think really big about his life, right? He's about to enter a residency program, and it started out with him wanting to get his life kind of back into a balanced state before he took on this huge commitment, which I'm sure you're well aware of. But he, you know, was kind of telling me how he's like looking to get a house, and kind of he wanted to get this house. And I was like, hey, like, you should please like think really, really big, right? Like, tell me, what is the exact beautiful house that you would love to have? He's like, okay, I want it to be 20 minutes from the office, from the hospital. I want it to have 4 bedrooms, a huge backyard, a fence, this and that. Interestingly enough, about 2 weeks after we had that conversation, he reaches out to me and tells me, you're never going to believe this, dude. I have an offer in and accepted on a house 20 minutes from the office. 4 bedrooms, big backyard, you know, this and that, like literally exactly what he told me. But when I saw this happen, I was like, wait a second, I need to think bigger myself, right? I have this vision of wanting to spread this idea of mindfulness and envisioning to the world, to travel the world, leading workshops for teams and companies, bringing my family along. Okay, so let me think really big. Let me challenge myself to think really, really big. What can I do? What would I love to see happen in my life towards this vision in the near future? And I started thinking about it. Okay, I said, all right, I want to lead these workshops. I've done a few at Google for Teams, but like, what would that look like if I was thinking really big? I said, okay, I want to do it for this guy who just was promoted to the president of the large customer sales in the Americas for Google. Probably $150 billion business, right? And I was like, no, that's not big enough. Not big enough. I know him. He's my old VP. I'm friends with his assistant. We used to meditate together. No, let's think even bigger. And so I said, okay, I want to lead a session for the CEO of Google. I said, all right, now we're thinking big. Now we're thinking big. And I'm like, I literally have no idea how this would ever come to be. So I thought about it, you know, thought about it from time to time. And a few months later, I'm up. I remember it's September 27th, 2023. And I'm up finishing up all my work for Q3 because, you know, that's sometimes how I do things. And I'm on my computer 11:30 p.m., which I am never on my computer 11:30 p.m. I get an email from a woman named Mary. And Mary says, I get these emails because I'm a facilitator, and I get, you know, people look for mindfulness facilitators. And she says, I'm looking for someone to lead a mindful leadership workshop for a group of executives. And I was like, perfect. That's perfectly aligned with my vision of wanting to do this for people. For teams. So I immediately reply to her. I say, hey, I'd love to help you. She replies back and sets up time to chat the next day. We get on the phone. I jot a few notes down ahead of time. Here's what I think would be a cool session. It's basically mindful leadership and envisioning. She says, that sounds awesome. And by the way, this is for Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google's executive leadership conference in Mountain View. Is that okay with you? She's like, it'd probably be about 50 to 100 SVPs and VPs. Yeah, I think I can make that work. So, I mean, and you know, one thing led to another. That opportunity came up and I gave everything I had to that. I put so much work into it, polished this thing, and went out, flew out to Mountain View, had a chance to lead this session for, it turned out to be 27 vice presidents. And I was super intentional about it and it went so well and has led to, I think, like a third of them wanted me to come and do sessions for their teams. And so I'm just like now walking down the path. But I think, you know, I tell this story not to brag, but to just talk about, to show that even the craziest, most unrealistic idea, once you kind of bring it into your mind as a possibility, becomes more possible. And, you know, I took some steps where I was trying to make, you know, I wasn't trying to make that in particular happen, but because I had this clarity on like, my vision is to lead this for teams and companies in the future, I started talking to assistants and people who hire people to do this, to understand what do they care about. And I started talking about this vision to people. And then this opportunity came up. And because it was so top of mind, and I happened to be looking at my email, I responded right away and was able to capitalize on it. And now I'm on literally on a, I'm like friends with Mary, and Mary has put me on a trusted speaker list for the CEO and executive teams at Google. It's like absolutely mind-blowing.
Well, Adam, I wanted to thank you for being on the show today. I think a lot of us are confused by this idea of mindfulness, but what it really comes down to is exactly what you said, non-judgmental awareness. And the magic here is that when we become aware and we start listening to those stories we tell ourselves and we drop all judgment from them, we realize that sometimes those stories aren't serving us. And then we can use things like envisioning to create these new stories that help us do things that maybe we thought we never would have the opportunity to do. I want to end this episode the way we end every episode, by asking you what is up next in your life and where people can find you. Specifically, what is up next with the Mindful Fire podcast? And if people want to know more about you, how can they reach out?
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for having me. I love this conversation and everything that you're putting out into the world. I'm super excited about your new book and you joining me on my podcast and all the fun things that we're going to be working on together. So thank you so much for having me. Yeah, what's next for me is, you know, I've been on a little bit of a hiatus with publishing episodes, but I have a ton of great episodes that people can check out from the past. I'm looking to get resuming, you know, as I said, I put everything into that CEO presentation. And so I'm going to be resuming episodes in May. And in May, I'm also going to be launching my Firestarter Mastermind, really designed for people who are at or near financial independence, who want to get clear on what they want their next chapter to look like and to start living it now. Right. And so this is not just for people. This is the program is for people who are at that stage. But the free envisioning guide I mentioned before is for anyone who wants to start living that post-fi life right now, using the power of envisioning and our predicting brain. And so the first step for doing that is really getting clear on what you actually want. And that one-page journaling exercise is designed to help you think really big and to connect with your biggest vision for your life and to start planting the seeds of that vision so you can start walking towards that little by little. And then by the time you reach your post-fi life, it's just a number on a screen, which in all reality, that's all it is anyways, and you're already living that life. And so if you want to, again, if you want to take that first step, I invite you to do that by downloading the free envisioning exercise at mindfulfire.org/docg. And that will get you on my email list and you can hear about all the things from me. And you can always hit reply and would love to connect with you, hear about your vision and support you in any way that I can.
Adam Cuello, thank you so much for coming on Earn and Invest today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's a wrap. Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts. We hear the term mindfulness batted around all the time, but most of us don't really understand the purpose and how exactly we get there. So I wanted to do this episode with Adam Cuello to talk about how mindfulness relates to purpose and to money. Listen, it's pretty straightforward, but that doesn't mean that it's something we hear that often. Mindfulness is the process of quieting yourself, emptying your thoughts, and listening deeply. And what we find through meditation or what have you is that when you start being more mindful, you start becoming aware of those scripts, those narratives that you carry with you that aren't serving you. So when we talk about scripts, when it comes to our relationship with money, we're talking about money scripts. And often because of the trauma we had during childhood, whether it's because our parents fought about money, or maybe that we grew up in poverty, or maybe money was there, but money became a proxy for love, all of those things imprint on us and give us these unhealthy money scripts, which are stories we tell ourselves about ourselves that often don't serve us. And so you become an adult who has these off-putting ideas about money because you've been telling yourself the story for decades that was really given to you by your parents or bad financial situations. the question is, and a lot of people ask me, well, how do I become aware of my own money scripts? And that's where mindfulness comes in. The point being that often we have to slow ourselves down to the point where we are listening to our deeper thoughts, ideas, listen to ourselves. What are those whisperings, those things that are going on in our mind that are happening behind the scenes that we're not always conscious of? It's really hard to get to those, but being mindful, quieting yourself down, slowing down, meditating, opening your brain up, clearing away the thoughts and seeing what bubbles up, that is the first step. It's the first step of dealing with these money scripts. It's the first step with dealing with meaning and purpose. Remember, as I've said often, meaning is about how we cognitively think about the past. It's the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. That's where we get these trauma narratives from, these poor money scripts and these poor life scripts. And so through meditation and mindfulness, we can become aware of those scripts. But the next step is just as difficult. Once you're aware of those scripts, you then have to rewrite them. So I'm a big believer in what's called neuroplasticity. Adam is too. This idea that these scripts we have, these narratives we tell ourselves over and over again for decades, actually imprint on our brains and change the nerves and neurons in such a way that we now have a well-beaten path. These stories are like walking over the same plot of land over and over again. If you walk in exactly the same place over and over again, you form a path that is cleared away of scrub and bush and grass and everything. We've cleared these paths in our mind, but these aren't healthy paths. And so what we have to do is we have to then create new narratives. And through those narratives, we have to create a new, more healthy path. And this is the process which Adam called envisioning or visualization. This is what affirmations are. This is our brain rewriting new paths so that we can get healthier, better scripts and live a happier, healthier life. So not only do we have to recognize the past, that's meaning, understanding these poor money scripts, generational trauma scripts, these bad narratives, but once we recognize them after being mindful, we then have to set our brain to rewriting new ones. And that's visualization, that's affirmations, that's learning to tell yourself a new story about who you are. And the reason why is if you want to have purpose in your life and find happiness, purpose is all about present and future, and it's about actions. And we need to walk into purpose and action and present and future with this feeling of agency or control. In other words, if you felt out of control in your past, if the scripts you tell yourself about your past are victim scripts where you had no agency, it's going to be really hard for you to walk into the present and future and feel confident that you control the tide, that you can change what is happening. And all of this starts with mindfulness. It doesn't have to be complicated. Close your eyes, concentrate, a few deep breaths, try to clear your mind. Every time your mind wanders to an idea, a worry, a concern, gently recognize that and walk it back to emptying those thoughts. Practice it over and over again. Be mindful so that you can move into the present and future joyfully. And I will remind you, if you're having trouble doing this on your own, I am happy to help. Go to earnandinvest.com/coaching. Again, that's earnandinvest.com/coaching to discuss the Path to Purpose coaching program, where I help people deal with meaning, purpose, enough, and career. I'd love to help you. Let me know. earnandinvest.com/coaching. All right, I keep things running just to catch our after show. Anything I missed? Anything I didn't ask you about? Any important piece? I know there's so much and there's so much you do. We obviously can't cover it all, but anything you feel like was pertinent that we didn't touch on?
No, I think we touched on pretty much all of it. The only thing I would say is, like, the question that comes up a lot is that what's the difference between goals or expectations and vision, right? And so I don't know if that's something you want to include or not, but
sure. Tell me about it. I mean, I have lots of opinions on that, but tell me your thoughts.
Yeah. So my thoughts are, you know, I often get asked this question, you know, okay, well, what if I envision it and it doesn't happen, right? And that brings up a point for me that I often share. It's like there's a difference between expectations and a vision or a dream, right? An expectation has a very specific way that it needs to look and a specific timeline in which it needs to happen. A vision or a dream is more open-ended, right? With envisioning, the way I coach people to kind of create these visions is to think really big, but to be open about the way and the timeline in which it happens, right? Because the disappointment comes when you're expecting to happen next week and it doesn't happen, or to look a certain way and it doesn't happen, right? And actually, I was leading a workshop for 200 people in January, and I was telling that story about the CEO and all that. And he's like, well, was the CEO in the room? I was like, well, no. He's like, so you didn't really achieve your vision. And I was like, okay. I was like, and I like made a joke. I'm like, everyone, Armand doesn't think I achieved my vision. And for me, you know, like if I had never set that vision, I would never have been in that situation in the first place. And I would say presenting at the CEO's conference to 27 vice presidents who can hire me in the future to make my vision a reality is pretty darn good. And so really it's all about having a clear vision of what you want and being open to the way and timeline in which it shows up.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize that ultimately success or failure, reaching your vision or not, is really up to how you interpret it. And so in a lot of ways, and we got this from the Donegan's talk at The Economy, is it's a great way of setting a direction and a path, right? So if you have a vision, which is a North Star, you may not specifically reach exactly that vision, but more likely the intentions behind that vision, you are very much going to live. And so it's setting a direction, setting intentions. And I found, at least in my life, when I actually start setting good intentions and start living by those, I make a lot more headway. And I do it in a much more joyous way. So if you've been, I've shared with you, Adam, my book. And my book is, some people could even call it anti-goal. And I don't think it's necessarily anti-goal. But there's this point that sometimes big, audacious goals can actually also have negative impacts. But I think what really resolves that is the idea is when you set, with envisioning, when you set your intentions, you don't necessarily have to exactly reach that specific goal. But what you're really saying is, I want to involve my life in activities that have the intention that this goal or this vision encompasses.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so that takes some of the stress off the specific goal and gives you some leeway to really breathe. Because, you know, a big part with me is if you're not enjoying the process of doing it, I don't care if you reach that vision or goal if it's miserable on the way. And so a lot of these visions actually, and I think what you probably do is you envision not only the goal, but enjoying the process of getting there, right? So the process of climbing that climb feels very positive and nourishing and fulfilling and et cetera.
Yeah. And envisioning how I want to feel at the goal and along the way, for sure.
For sure.
Like that's something that I think goals don't capture. They don't capture how you want to feel. And I think that's, I mean, that's why we do anything, right? Like we do things because we want to feel good or we want to avoid feeling bad. And so, yeah, I mean, I resonated with a lot of you know, I'm not all the way through your book, but I'm loving it. And the purpose anxiety and the big P purpose and the stress that that causes and these goals, you know, like I used to set these goals like, oh, I want to reach $200,000 a year in my business. And it's just like, I get so overwhelmed by the goal that I don't do anything and I feel bad and then I don't do anything. It's just like a vicious cycle. It's like,
what's the point? Whereas envisioning, I want to have a work life that fills me up where I feel like I have agency to change the outcomes and that I have a certain amount of mastery. Like that's a really healthy vision that kind of has a goal behind it, but it's not as specific of I need to make $200,000 a year being an entrepreneur, right?
Yep.
Very
exactly.
Cool.
You care about your money. Of course you do. So why aren't you listening to SoFi Daily? This podcast will keep you updated on the latest news in the stock market and how it could impact your financial life. Stay on top of what's happening. Listen to SoFi Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. That's SoFi Daily, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tech moves fast, so keep pace with the Daily Crunch podcast from TechCrunch. With new episodes every day, this podcast will give you a quick overview on everything you need and should know about startups, new tech, regulations, and more. Listen to TechCrunch Daily Crunch now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's TechCrunch Daily Crunch, wherever you get your podcasts.